Hello and welcome to the Providence College Podcast. I'm your host, Liz Kay, and I'm joined by producer Chris Judge of the class of 2005. Here on the Providence College Podcast, we bring you interesting stories from the Fryer family. This week, we're talking with Dr. Ashley Smith Previance, an assistant professor who teaches in Black Studies and Public and Community Service Studies, and Brittany Smith, a member of the class of 2023. With a $15,000 grant from the Nellie Mae Educational Foundation, Dr. Smith Previance has created a program for middle school girls who are Black called Black Girl Magic. Brittany, a marketing major and Black Studies minor, is one of four PC women serving as mentors for the program. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Dr. Smith Previance, you studied educational policy at the University of Wisconsin at Madison. Can you tell us some about your research focus and some of your findings?
Yes. So I did a study in the Midwest, not able to say the location just for protection of my participants. But I pretty much was doing this work of Black Girl Magic. I started a program at two middle schools. And so a lot of what was happening was that there were these predominantly white suburban middle schools that Black girls were, majority of them were being bused to from their neighborhoods. And so as they got there, obviously there was like culture shock, not really having teachers that looked like them, not having very many peers that looked like them. And so a lot of them just kind of started to have a negative perception or feeling about their Black identity. And that was something that wasn't necessarily focused on, obviously, in the classroom and curriculums, et cetera. And so in addition to that, there were just some conflicts across the girls. So when I was reached out to, it was kind of framed as they were constantly fighting. They weren't getting along. They started to target each other. And so my response to that was to start the Black Girl Magic group. I had connected with Black women that I knew from the past. And so we pretty much just came in and worked together to create a space for them to really talk about whatever it is that they wanted to talk about, but also really centering their identity as Black girls. Trying to build community was a big thing because there were constant conflicts between them. And so some of the findings suggest that obviously Black Girl Magic is a necessary space for them to do a lot of that work around identity and just, you know, falling in love with themselves 100% wholly. But on the other side of that, I do look at the school as a predominantly white suburban school that is highly resourced and how they fail at providing support for Black girls, how they hyper-discipline Black girls, and also just the day-to-day interactions with teachers, with administrators, right, with support staff, how that was different for the girls than it was for other students who attended the schools.
Wow, there's so much there to talk about. So it sounds like you're saying that the stress that they were experiencing due to the culture shock was resulting in them fighting with each other and lashing out at each other, which is just so troubling. I mean, were the girls all from the same neighborhoods? Did they know each other before they came to the school and they still, like, it still caused this distress?
So a lot of them didn't know each other from what I remember. Some of them did because they did live in the same neighborhood. They lived in the same community complex. And so they were familiar with each other, whether they had built relationships with each other or not, they at least recognized one another. And then some of them actually did live in the surrounding suburban area as well. And so it was just like coming into the school, trying to get to know each other. And it's natural, right? Like young middle schoolers have conflicts. Like middle schoolers, one day, you know, we're best friends, and then the next day we aren't. And so that's just something that's normal, but I did not appreciate the way that it was not seen as like a normal childhood behavior when it was Black girls who were conflicting with each other. And so, yeah, it kind of was always just kind of put as a spectacle almost. And like everybody knew when the Black girls were fighting, everybody knew when it was like conflicts between them. Teachers would have conversations about it. Administrators knew about it. Eventually, once we got into the school, we knew about every daily conflict that they had as well. And so, yeah, it was like a lot of it was just like this natural being a middle schooler, trying to figure out, you know, life in general, who's my friend, who's not my friend. And then some of it, I do think that it had to do with identity and like already being ostracized at the school. And then on top of that, it's like trying to figure out who are these other Black girls and like, do I like them? Do I not like them? You know, all of that was just a lot to deal with.
Right. So just natural relationship building, but it, you know, it was escalated on behalf of the school administrators and everyone else. Like it just turned into something totally different.
Right.
So tell us about the program, how it was developed and what were the elements that you incorporated to try to address some of these issues?
Yeah. So at the outset, I really just wanted to know what it was that the girls wanted. So I think even just the first couple of times of going to the school, I was just like, what are some things that you all want to talk about or what's some stuff that's happening? And immediately, I think in the first at one of the schools in the first few sessions, they didn't even really know us that well, but they were just like, this happened at school today, or this teacher did this, or this happened. And that just told me that they didn't have anybody to talk to. They were obviously thinking about these things. They were wondering, like, is this racism? Is this something else? Or am I, you know, overreacting? And so I kind of just took all of that and absorbed it and tried to work with the other women to develop some kind of programming. And like I said, on top of that, there were conflicts. So it started out as like a lot of mediation. Other facilitators that I worked with, they would take time out of their day, spend time with the girls, like literally leave work to come spend time with the girls, trying to just mediate a lot of the conflict that they had with each other, and then try to come back and bring them back into the group so that we could talk about, you know, what does it mean to be a Black girl? What does it mean to be a Black girl in middle school? And just a lot of different conversations around like health, wellness, beauty, et cetera, stereotypes, all of that. So yeah, and then I guess I also, in that, like I did not do this work alone, so I can't take full credit. Like I always wanna give credit to the women that I worked alongside with and who worked alongside each other to try to make this a group for the girls. But I do say, I would like to say that central to that is what the girls needed. So we only operated based on what it is that they wanted to talk about, things that may have come up in natural conversation. So we didn't necessarily go in and say like, this is what we're doing, this is the focus of the group. You know, we really try to get their buy-in as well.
But that sounds neat. I imagine that middle schoolers of any age probably don't have a lot of agency. Like they don't get to direct what they're learning on so many levels. So that was probably pretty empowering as well.
Right.
I want to take a minute and just ask you if you could define the term Black girl magic for anyone who's listening who might not just be familiar with that term on their own.
Yeah, so it's actually not a term that I created. I got obviously a hold of it through the internet, social media, but there's a Black woman who started that actual phrase, and her definition of it is really just to celebrate the dopeness, the amazingness of being a Black girl. And so that doesn't always look like, you know, accolades or, you know, just, you know, oh, I graduated or, you know, I have a new job. Like some of those things are celebrated, but it's also just the everyday, what it looks like to be a Black girl, whether that is like, I have beautiful curly natural hair, or, you know, I'm just a Black girl and things that I do in life, I have to come up against various struggles, et cetera, but I'm still, you know, just kind of moving and figuring out life. Like that's worthy of a celebration. And so that's really what the term pretty much comes from the person who started it. And I guess for myself, something I'm trying to at least be cognizant of is like, when we say Black girl magic, who are we talking about? So are we being inclusive of all girls? Or is it just a certain kind of girl? Do you have to identify as a cis, right? Cisgender, heterosexual girl, you know? So I'm also careful to not exclude certain people from that term as well.
And so how has the program evolved since you've come to PC and are establishing it here? What's different for this group?
So I think this group is different because it's in what some people would call a more urban school setting. And so a lot of the students see kids that look like them every single day. And so whereas the group that I had in the past, the issue was that they didn't see other students like them. They didn't see other teachers like them at their school, but that's completely different here. And I wouldn't necessarily say that identity is a huge struggle for a lot of the girls that we work with, but it is something that's still there. And we are just really trying to start to tap into those conversations. But I think that here there's more opportunity and possibility to really define like Black girlhood for themselves and what that could look like, because they all already, a lot of them are pretty much grounded in their identity. And I get that from like some of the things that they've written and they like share out. Right now we're meeting virtually. So like some of the stuff that they say, like, you know, I'm awesome because I'm a Black girl or whatever, like that's stuff that they've naturally just started to say. And so that's something that I think is very interesting. I think another component of that is the mentors. So I will say that in the past, a lot of the women that I worked with were older adults like myself. And so I appreciate that there's a younger generation through the mentors that will be able to kind of like work with the girls, but also lead the way of what this looks like. Because I'm not, I guess, I'm aware that I am older and I have been removed from girlhood for a while. And so I think that to standardize this curriculum is like, okay, now I'm taking it to the East Coast and this is what it is. I think that I need to kind of step back sometimes and allow other people to take a leadership role and to kind of decide what it looks like in this space. And so I'm really grateful for the mentors like Brittany, as well as Kim, Jennifer, and also Brianna, who really have stepped up and taken a leadership role in this position too.
And so the group you're working with now is at Gilbert Stuart Middle School in Providence?
Yes. Yes.
And what are the sessions like and how many folks are involved? How many girls are participating?
Yeah. So over the course of last semester, off and on, we've seen about 13 to 15 girls. So the thing with Zoom is they kind of like pop in or pop out. So some weeks we'll have like 8 girls, some weeks we'll have 4 girls. In the beginning, it was a larger number around like 11 to 13. And so, yeah, everything is virtual, which makes it a lot more challenging than it was when it was in person. But there are still opportunities. I know there have been girls who maybe were babysitting, and they're still there. They may not be participating fully, but they're still able to be there. Rather, if it was in person, it's like, well, I got to go home because I got to go babysit, you know. So I think that that's something that has been a different kind of opportunity. So yeah, we've met weekly on Mondays for an hour. And similar to how I did it in the past, I really was just trying to get buy-in from the girls. Like, what are some things you all want to do? I also think there's some hesitation because it's harder to develop that in-person relationship via Zoom. So when we're asking them, like, what do you want to do? I think they just like, I don't know, you know, like they still haven't really had that full rapport with us yet. So that, and then too, it's just like, well, I haven't, like you said, I haven't had the autonomy to say how I want a group to run. So I think that sometimes that can be a little bit daunting for them. But honestly, this semester has been really cool. I think that it would be awesome if it could have been in person. But I definitely want to give some more time to this semester to really like plan and just try to figure out how to do all of this virtually, because that was my first semester doing it virtually ever. And so I think this semester, now that we know how it is, it's potential for it to be a little bit more fruitful. So yeah,
I feel like what you said, I didn't consider it that way, but that the fact that it's virtual meant that a few more girls could participate, that it actually, that's almost like a silver lining. I feel like we're spending all this time trying to find silver linings and all this. But the fact that perhaps mm-hmm. this might have made it accessible to a few people who might not have been able to. Otherwise, it's like, well, not ideal, like everything in 2020 and 21 right. has been, but it's still something, right? You're still going forward, still,
right.
still making change. Brittany, can you tell us a little bit about your training as a facilitator and what the experience has been like for you?
Yeah, so basically I got an email from Professor Edwards, and she's just like talking about what the program was. And obviously I was super intrigued. I didn't even know this was a possibility. Ashley's new to PC, so like none of this has ever been there before. And I think that as a Black Studies minor, someone who like cares a lot about just like social like justice and like race relations in the country and particularly like, in our school, I was just so excited to see something that brought light to what Black Studies is trying to do as a minor, and then also like connecting it to Providence, which I think is obviously always a part of the conversation, because the demographic of PC compared to the demographic of Providence is something I think is very interesting, and has recently like has we've shone a light on it in terms of conversations of how our community interacts and how we can have a more positive impact on the Providence cities. So I think that this program itself is like a great step in a wonderful direction. In terms of training, I know that we met, and mostly I think that what Ashley really wanted to do with us is for us to like bring our own interest and what we think that we could do for the girls to the table. I don't think it was much about like, obviously we talked about like what's appropriate in terms of like social media, things like that, because they are middle schoolers. They might be like, oh my God, like I think she's so cool, let me follow her on Instagram and stuff like that. Obviously we try to like stray away from. But I think other than that, I think the point of the mentors being there is like another support system for the girls. And like Ashley was saying, like we are younger, so we're kind of like right between the two of them. And so I remember like during our first meeting, we just came up with ideas of what we wanted to do throughout the semester, and kind of like the whole buying in process, like how can we do like topics, but in a way that won't be like taking a Black Studies class in middle school. So like, I think one of our first like meetings together, we did like narratives. So like they kind of like drew pictures of themselves and said like, this is who they see themselves as, which I thought was extremely beautiful, because like Ashley had said earlier, a lot of them were like, I'm a beautiful Black girl. And I remember me being in middle school, I don't think I would have said that in middle school. And so I just love seeing how things have changed over the years.
What other sorts of activities have you done with the girls so far? Again, with the challenges, recognizing the challenges of the virtual space and the virtual reality you have to deal with this year.
Yeah, I think it's really hard in the sense that like a lot of the things you do want to do in person or like, you know, it would be easier in person. So I think that we did like friendship bracelet making over Zoom, where actually like sent materials to them, which also I think that makes it easier is that we're able to like send them things. We did like we like cutting out pieces of magazines, almost like vision boarding is another thing that we've done. So very like hands-on, like crafty, which is like making the virtual space like work for us. And so I think they like can go to their middle school, pick those things up, and then they do it from home, and that way like we all can like get involved. So those are some of the things that we've done like this semester. And I know like we're going to have a lot of more like fun things planned for next semester as well. I don't know if I left anything out that we've done.
Yeah, only thing I would add is sometimes we like play games with them. So they are into this game called Among Us. And that's something I had no idea how to even play it. So like, luckily it's a game that we can all join as a group. So we did that with them. And it was on Zoom, but we were all on our own individual like phones or tablets, like playing along with them. Another thing, I think in the beginning, because I do like go to the school every week and just drop off supplies for them, because they still do in-person school. And for girls who are doing just completely fully remote, I've been dropping things off at their homes, like after I've gotten permission, obviously. And so we had a bag for them that they would just ideally bring to school every week so that they can fill it with supplies and snacks and all that stuff. And so we had them decorate the bag so that they would have something, you know, just representative of the group. And so that, in addition to all the things that Brittany mentioned, and just having like open conversation, again, they're still pretty shy. So we've been trying to encourage that. But moving forward, I'm just trying to think of more interactive activities, but also trying to really start to open up for a dialogue a bit more too. So, yeah.
we'd also like open up some of the meetings with like what's a good part of your day and like a bad part of your day. But I think something else that we realized is that this is a new space that we're all navigating. Like nobody is like super great at Zoom, and how can you, you know, work in a space, especially when you're talking about like middle school students who everything's really like they're used to everything being in person. And so like, how can you make it fun while also like over, so like we've had to make some changes of like things that we've done. So I think literally every day or like every time we meet, like it gets better, we learn more. And so like, that's like one of like the most positive experiences about it. Like we're willing to be like, okay, this didn't work necessarily, or this is how we can make it better. So.
You can't deny, I'm sure so many of these girls are dealing with Zoom fatigue in the probably the worst way at this point, right? Like, so you've got challenges without a doubt, but it sounds like amazing work, and it sounds like the students are really benefiting. And that, I'm kind of curious, you know, have you, it's been a short time. When do you think you started with the Gilbert Stuart students?
Pretty sure we started at the beginning of November. So I believe our first session was November 2nd because I got the grant in October. So yeah, we started in November.
So I'm curious how you'll measure success with the program. Are you able to, well, what are your goals and hopes and dreams for the girls who are participating?
Yeah, so I think my measurement of success, it may look a little bit differently, but it's just the return. So if I see them coming back, there's obviously still an interest there. And so I think that's success to me. Even if it was just one girl that came every single week, at least we were reaching one girl. And so I think that, but because we have like, even for students who maybe can come every single week, they may have come like towards one of our last group sessions. So I'm like, okay, it wasn't that this wasn't working for you or this isn't a space for you. It was just things come up. And one of the girls, she texts me all the time, like, oh, I had to go with my family to this state or whatever. Holidays obviously became a conflict during the first fall semester, too. So I'm hoping that this next semester, there's a little bit less breaks and conflicts. But we'll just see what happens. And I think just hearing from the girls, like, how do you like the group? Eventually, we'll start to have those conversations with them, too. What are some things you want to see happen or change differently? But I also feel like we do that every single week. So we pretty much wrap up the group just saying, is there something else you want us to do? Something else we need to incorporate? You know, how can we make it better? And I try to really get that from the mentors too. Like, is this working for you even as a mentor? Like, is it, you know, what do you think can be done better? So like I said, I don't really operate off of an individualistic, you know, just kind of perspective. This is literally a community space. And although it's happening via Zoom, I'm operating as if I'm in community. So everybody's voice, everybody's opinion matters. And that's what success would look like at the end of the day for the group.
Well, Brittany, I'm curious from your perspective, you know, how do you feel you've changed or benefited? I mean, or even how do you reflect back on your own middle school experience based on what your interactions with these students now?
Yeah, so I kind of went to probably like a very similar middle school as like the girls go to. I went to a school where pretty much everybody looked like me, except for like my teachers maybe. And so I didn't have a program like this and stated like within my school. And I do say like, when I met with Ashley for the first time, I always say that I'm a product of the programs that happened in my community, but I wish I did have one specifically for Black girls. I think that when we do talk about race relations in this country, I think that the conversation often gets skewed towards Black men and how you raise Black boys and how you love Black men. And I think that's very important, but I do think Black girls are left out of the conversation, especially within the African-American community. It's very matriarchal, basically. So like a lot of the pressure is put on Black girls from a young age. And, you know, there's that notion of, oh, she's fast or she's too grown. And like all these ideas where Black girls don't get to live in their childhood for long enough. It's always like it's time to grow up, or they're forced to grow up before their other peers. And so I could feel that completely. I'm a My mom's a single mother, and so I've seen very strong Black women. But I also don't think Black girls need to be strong. I think we could be vulnerable. I think we should be able to feel our feelings when we have to feel it and not have to, you know, not cry, because that's not the strong thing to do, or it shows weakness. And so I think with all of this being said, I wanted to do something like that, especially as I've gotten older. I always was like, I want to be the person or the adult that I needed when I was a kid. And so like that is like Black Girl Magic is giving me the opportunity to do that through like the form of being a mentor. And even watching like Ashley like set this whole entire thing together, moving to a different state and saying, you know what, I'm still gonna do it, shows how important it is. Like Black girls everywhere need programs like this, need something like this. And not only are we mentors, but we're also Black women mentors, which I think is even more important. A lot of the programs that I went to when I was younger, a lot of my mentors or a lot of the facilitators for the programs were usually white people, well-meaning white people, but they didn't look like me. So it was very hard to see myself like, yes, you're successful, but it's hard to see myself being able to follow in your footsteps, because we have very different, like upbringings and where we're from. And so we're like a reflection for them of like who they can be and where they can go, especially in higher education, and like professors and status and everything, to show them that there are people that look like you in each step of life, and don't let, you know, media and don't let the news and all these other things tell you anything different, that literally the sky is the limit.
I think you've said so much there, and it's so gratifying to hear that you've been able to find this positive experience, you know, that, you know, maybe the adult that you wish you had had when you were an age, and, you know, you get to do that as a college sophomore. That's fantastic. I think you mentioned something that has always been really intriguing. I feel like I've heard the statistic that people perceive Black children to be older than they really are. And I'm curious, you know, how that comes out in your group, if you could reflect on how it has come out, Ashley, in when you were with your previous group and here in Rhode Island. Do you see the effects of, there's so many elements of that. It's like just people expecting more mature behavior from someone who's younger and, you know, may not be ready for that, but also even like family responsibilities, having to take care of family members or other things. How do you see that manifest with your students?
Yeah, so I think definitely from my previous research, that was a huge factor. And just the ways, not only that Black girls weren't allowed to be children or, you know, engage in just, you know, childlike behavior, but they were also expected to respond in a more mature rate, in a more mature way. Like one of the administrators mentioned, like, I just want them to come to school and be vulnerable. I just want them to, you know, come here, just kind of put it all out on the table. Let me know what's happening. Let me know what's going on. And it's like, that's so much pressure as a middle schooler. Like I'm already just trying to figure out what all of these things mean. And then I'm entering the school building and I have no idea, you know, how my teachers really, truly feel about me. Like one of the students that I was interviewing, she just said, I know it. My teacher hates me, but I don't know why. I didn't do anything to her, but I just know she hates me. So dealing with that, and it's like, well, can I trust you to tell you that I feel like my teacher hates me? And on top of that, I'm just second guessing it myself in the first place. So that expectation for me to be vulnerable. And when they were vulnerable, when they did tell people like, oh, this is happening to me, or this student said this to me and it hurt my feelings, it was just like, okay, you know, we're all middle schoolers. We're all growing up though. So we have to learn to be more mature and not let things hurt our feelings, you know, or just, you know, if they retaliated, if they instead said something harmful to a student that did something harmful to them, then it was just like, well, you know better. You weren't supposed to do that. You know, you shouldn't have responded in that way. And so it was just constantly being up against that attack of like, okay, I can't be a child. I can't respond. And I can't tell you when things are happening because nothing will get done at the end of the day. So what does vulnerability look like for me as a Black girl when everybody else in the school building just gets to run around, they get to call people names, they get to get away with it. And they actually get to be vulnerable. They can cry and not be told that they just have to get over it. So that was something definitely in my research. And Here, obviously, we haven't tapped into that a lot, but I do know that when I had an initial conversation with the school principal, she did mention some of those things, like some of our students are waking up at 4 a.m. and already have had a full day by the time they get to school at, you know, 7 or 8 a.m. That's some stuff that other students don't have to deal with. So if I am falling asleep in class, it's because I've been up since 4 a.m., you know, taking care of siblings or managing other responsibilities. And it's not because I'm just so unengaged and I don't care about school, you know, so things like that, that I think people don't oftentimes take into account. But also, that's not every Black child's story. And so I don't want to normalize that as such. And so even if you are falling asleep in class just because you're tired, you don't have to have gone through so many other structural issues, right, before you came to school. Middle schoolers fall asleep in class all the time. Like, even as a college student, I fell asleep in class sometimes. So, you know, just allowing our children to just be children and to know that it's okay, like, if they do things that other people do and honestly oftentimes get away with. But it's different for Black youth and particularly so for Black girls. And that's what a lot of my research has found. There's a ton of research out there that talks about that, especially for middle school. So that's why my heart is in middle school, because I had so many experiences as a middle schooler. But a lot of the research is talking about how some teachers or adults already perceive Black girls between ages 5 through 14 as adults, as already knowing more about life, knowing more about sex, knowing more, like expecting more mature behaviors from them. Like, you can't even be an 11-year-old. Like, what does that look like for a Black girl? You don't even know.
I'm curious how you both see the program growing and expanding. What are the next steps? Hopefully, once we can get to an in-person place, that'll be in the future, I'm sure. But where do you think Black Girl Magic is going?
Yeah, so I guess I could start, and then Brittany, feel free to share. My goal is just that it's here and that it is sustainable. The grants that I received was extremely helpful for getting supplies and resources, but I do realize that that will run out after this year. And so I know that the girls will, that's a huge buy-in to participating too. It's like, okay, we get materials, we get supplies. And so I'm hoping to be able to find some kind of support for the future years to allow that to continue and so that it can expand. I hope that, you know, eventually I'm not the face of like leading it. I hope that more mentors, you know, like Brittany, take over it, make it what it should be for the future. And also I am really hoping that eventually like it follows along, right? And not to kind of put out this pipeline thing, but I hope that the girls that we work with now, eventually they start their own girls groups or they start their own, you know, programs or whatever it is, so that it's just this constant cycle of us helping each other out and doing something, creating some form of support. So those are my initial goals.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that this is definitely something like I want to stick with, at least like through my undergrad. But I would love to see it grow and expand also, like in terms of hopefully like when we're in a more safe, like health-wise time period, like maybe like, you know, just like trips and things like that. I would love to be able to just, you know, like actually experience things with the girls in person, but I would love like trips and maybe like going to the school and things like that. But definitely I could see this program growing, and I want it to become a staple, not just within like the Black Studies minor, but just something that like people are aware of that PC does. Just to circle it back to the whole conversation about the relationship between Providence College and Providence the city, this is a great program to have to show that PC is working to better the community and not just here to take the resources from the actual residents of this city. And so I'm so excited to see how Black Girl Magic can grow throughout the years.
Something else I'll add too is in the fall, I'll actually be teaching a course called Black Girl Magic, focusing on just Black feminist approaches to community organizing specifically, but in creating like these spaces for Black youth. And so when I did the initial recruitment for mentors, I did get a lot of responses. And so unfortunately, I was only able to support 4 students financially. But hopefully that class will be filled with students who are interested in doing this work and getting involved. So that'll be coming in the fall semester, which I'm actually really looking forward to. So I'm just, again, just trying to foster that connection between PC and students here at PC and as well as the larger community in Providence.
It feels like this past election cycle, there might be a lot of good material, good current events to talk about in that, in your class, in terms of just thinking about the Georgia senatorial race and all the credit that's been going there to the people who are driving out the vote. So I always ask this of every faculty and student that we talk with, because this has been such an unusual year, just in terms of how you reflect on a year of pandemic education. What have there, and again, just thinking about silver linings, if you could tell me a little bit about, for both of you, you know, what are things that have helped you get through this really tough time for teaching and learning?
Okay, I'll start. For me, I think that with so much of this year being spent inside and there being less things to distract us like there are normally, I think it has really put into perspective how fast a year is, that 365 days can go by and can only feel like an hour has been spent. And so it's really made me think about how I spend my time, and not only how I spend my time, but what I do with that time. How can I improve myself and also like the people that I care about around me? Obviously, I'm only a sophomore, but I think that there are so many opportunities at PC, outside of PC, that are available. And they do take a lot of work. I don't think anything that I'm doing or participating in right now is easy, and I don't have to think a lot about, but I do think that these are things that are going to help me grow as a person. And so I'd rather be spending that time than basically like not doing anything at all. So I think for me, like this year has all about been about self-improvement and self-reflection. How can I be the best Brittany possible? And keeping my eyes out for like all the opportunities there that helps you grow. I think everything that you do in life should be adding to your content rather than taking it away. And so the more I participate, especially like I think that as a marketing major in the business school, a lot of times you become a business major, and like that's your personality and that's what you do. But then also with like my Black Studies minor, which I think a lot of times I hear people be like, I'm a marketing and finance double major, or like I'm a marketing with an accounting minor, like all these things, or an English minor. But you don't hear a lot about like the two together. Is really helping me become grounded in my purpose, that I do have this interest in marketing, but at the end of the day, I experience the world as a Black woman. And I refuse to let myself forget that, and also refuse to let anybody else around me forget that. Because even though that isn't the definition of who I am, it has made me who I am. And I wouldn't be here without acknowledging those parts of myself. So I make sure everybody around me acknowledge those parts of me as well.
I think for me, this year has been very interesting because I was in the midst of finishing my dissertation last spring as the pandemic was happening and just starting to lose so much. So something that was big was graduation. Like I didn't get to experience a typical graduation for my PhD, which obviously that hurt. But on top of that, there was just so much more loss around me, thinking about like the murders and death of Black people en masse, and also the way that we have been impacted by COVID-19 at large. And so that has just been very eye-opening, but also very disheartening. And so many times when I just wanted to give up, I know a lot of people, even I see on like social media, have said, oh, well, this pandemic has allowed me to slow down. It has allowed me to take a break. I don't feel like I've gotten that break, because it has been so much that has continuously happened to people who look like me on the daily. And how I have experienced those events have obviously also impacted me as well. And so I think about my students. So moving here, transitioning, starting my first semester as a professor, and trying to make connections with my students in the midst of all of this happening, but doing so virtually was probably one of the biggest challenges. And especially so for students of color who I know were being impacted by a lot of the things that were happening. So, you know, this past semester was already a lot given election and all of that. But knowing that Breonna Taylor did not receive what some people would conceive of as justice, right? Like the complete dismissal of her case. And that happened right in the middle of the semester. And I was like, I had to take a break and pause and acknowledge that. And students started to appreciate the fact that I was bringing in current events, not just current events, but actual things that were impacting them on an emotional level. And so it could have been easy to just be like, well, Black Girl Magic, that can wait until life happens again and we can go back in person. But knowing that college students were impacted by these things, knowing that myself as an adult was extremely impacted, I always thought about middle schoolers and also young Black girls, like, how are they processing these things? Like, what is happening with them? And so obviously when the opportunity came up to start the group, as much as I wanted to be like, nope, I'm not doing it. This is my first semester. It's too much going on. I realized that I cannot quit. And so I cannot quit on myself. And I also cannot quit on my community and students who look like me. And so that's been one of the biggest things for me throughout this entire year, being in this pandemic, seeing all the different forms of state violence, social, like societal violence, structural violence, and noticing and knowing that Black life is still very, very much so valuable to me. And so how do I continue to make sure that I push that forward and do what I can for my people, essentially. So, yeah.
As you said, so much more work to be done as we go forward. But I think, I'm sure your students in Black Girl Magic would say this. I know we say it, that they're just grateful that programs like this exist. You know, got to start somewhere. And if it helps these the middle school students this year, you know, in a year when clearly these conversations are so needed and necessary and just a place to explore these questions. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Subscribe to the Providence College Podcast in all the usual places, including iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, and our newest platform, Spotify. If you like what you hear, please review and share with others. Thanks for listening, and go Friars.